Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record, program number 1086, Fascism, 2019 World Tour, Part 1. This is being recorded on September 3rd of the year 2019. Well, as the slightly sarcastic tone, I wouldn't say sarcastic, but portraying fascism as a mega rock band or mega entertainment act really is partially relevant. It in one sense could be in that it keeps people dazzled with public spectacle and with false ideology, while basically bending the vast majority of them over and reaming them out in no uncertain terms. Although, usually by the time the reaming process is finished, those who are getting reamed are basically too late. It is too late for them to, redeem themselves or re-ream themselves, so to speak. We are going to be looking around the world in this and certainly our next program at the manifestations of fascism around the world. A number of things to call attention to. One, the ubiquitousness of anti-immigrant sentiment in mobilizing fascist political affiliation. This is true in some countries that have had a lot of immigration, and some, as we will see, in Estonia, that have had effectively none. In a recent series of programs, we took a look at AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and the Subhas Chandra Bose acolyte Sekhat Chakraborty, and what I believe is the manifestation of an illegal immigration or illegal immigrant psyop in the U.S., with AOC as an iconic left socialist meant to identify the Democratic Party with illegal immigrants or immigrants in general in the public's eye, and Sekhat Chakraborty, whose links go to Bridgewater Associates, the largest hedge fund in the world, a major funder of Palantir, the alpha predator of the surveillance landscape, and an institution conducting much of the electronic surveillance for ICE, which AOC rails against. Bridgewater Associates' legal counsel for a long time, or for a while anyway, was James Comey, who then went to become head of the FBI and was instrumental in putting Donald Trump in office with his handling of the Hillary Clinton email non-scandal. Evidence suggests that Sekhat Chakraborty may well be a Peter Thiel protege or associate, and he certainly is someone who, along with his protege, AOC, and AOC is basically a product of the machinations of Sekhat Chakraborty, is, as a medium post noted, an occupant of the very same gray money areas that Chakraborty, AOC et al. Rail against. We are going to take a look not only at the ubiquitousness of anti-immigrant sentiment as a mobilization ideology for fascism or a mobilizing ideology for fascism, but also we are going to be, taking a look at the role of the internet and social media. We are in an entirely different phase of civilization, and we have moved into that very quickly. And we are not in Kansas anymore, Tokyo, not by a damn sight. So that is something to look at and something to keep in mind. Also, a recent series of programs based around the book Surveillance Valley by Yasha Levine, as important a book as I have ever read and a book that I think the reading of which is essential for an understanding of our civilization, looms large in the background of what we are talking about. There has been a lot of focus, and when the 2019 world tour of fascism goes back to the U.S., we will be taking a look at recent mass shootings at the Gilroy Garlic Festival in California, in El Paso, Texas, and the role of the Internet and fascist elements in promoting the ideology that appears to have driven some of those people. And once again, the role of the Internet is fundamental. And bear in mind, too, that the uprising that takes place in the Turner Diaries begins with gun control. And while nobody is proposing to confiscate weapons, the right-wing media and Internet echo chamber will certainly be portraying it in that fashion. And indeed, Brenton Tarrant, who was the apparent shooter in Christchurch, New Zealand, video streamed his rampage against mosques in part to spur a U.S. drive for gun control, which he felt would lead to a right-wing uprising. Speaking of so-called neo-Nazis, that is not a word I like. And speaking of the Turner Diaries, of course, one of the groups that was inspired by that key doctrine of leaderless resistance was the Nazi group The Order. Among the things they did was to assassinate Denver talk show host Alan Berg and a fellow named David Lane, who became very large in the Odinist milieu, the Odinist religion milieu, and who coined the 14 word that has become a catchphrase or an emblem of Nazi and fascist sentiment around the world. By the way, we will be getting back to the Turner Diaries and that discussion when we, I guess, maybe following our return, following the fascism world tour's return to the U.S., but indicating not only the vitality of fascism and Nazism in Ukraine, but the legal protection around the activities of groups like this is embodied in the following. This, by the way, is from Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, and Christopher Miller, itself an organization that has links going back to the CIA. And I think it may well be that some of what is going on is too much, even for some elements of what has become known as the, quote, left, unquote, CIA. This is from August 6th of 2019 from Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty by Christopher Miller. Ukrainian court rules against news outlet that called violent far-right group, quote, neo-Nazi, unquote. A Ukrainian court has ruled in favor of a violent far-right organization labeled a nationalist hate group by the U.S. State Department that claimed a news outlet damaged its reputation when it labeled it as, quote, neo-Nazi, unquote, in a tweet last year. The independent Romadske TV, that's HROMADSKE TV, said in a statement on August 6th, that the Kiev City Commercial Court decided that the outlet could not provide sufficient evidence to support its claim that C-14, which takes its name from a 14-word phrase used by white supremacists and whose own members have admitted to joining it because of its neo-Nazi ideology, was in fact a neo-Nazi organization. The ruling orders Romadske TV to retract its tweet and pay the equivalent of $136 US in court fees for C-14. The decision is incorrect and illegal. It introduces an egregious tendency that suppresses freedom of speech. We will appeal it, said Oksana Tsiolkovska, an attorney for Romadsky TV. Romadsky TV's editor-in-chief, Angelina Karakina, said she was, quote, surprised by the decision, unquote. Karakina said that Romadsky stood by its characterization of C-14 as neo-Nazi, despite the ruling. Well, I think Ms. Karakina should not have been so surprised, given that in Ukraine there are the lustration laws, which makes it illegal to tell the truth about organizations like the OUNB and its military arm, the UPA. We'll have more to say about OUNB in a minute. The OUNB and the UPA were basically not only allies of the Third Reich and affiliated with Third Reich intelligence through the SS and through the Reinhard-Gehlen spy outfit, which jumped to the U.S. at the end of World War II. But they were the administrators, to a large extent, of Nazi ethnic cleansing and genocidal policy in Ukraine and parts of what are now Poland during the Second World War. And C-14, again, that is the military cadre of Svoboda, named for the 14 words minted by David Lane of the Order. C-14 is, again, the military cadre or the militia of an organization called Svoboda, which is outright fascist, and that was part not only of the Maidan uprising, but held posts in the provisional government that was established after the Maidan uprising. The woman, Katerina Kluk, in charge of Facebook policy for Ukraine, it was a member of Svoboda, and Mr. Tiahnybok, the Oleg Tiahnybok, the head of Svoboda, gives the Nazi salute and was photographed alongside people like Senator John McCain and the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine. And the Svoboda group, again, is basically part of the Ukrainian government. C-14 gets funding from the Ukrainian government for its youth programs, and the C-14 militia has been given police powers in parts of Ukraine. So Ms. Karyakina should not have been surprised by the decision.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
More about Ukraine the deepening of fascism in that country despite PR attempts in the U.S., an interesting article, long on rhetoric, relatively short on substance, but if one parses it appropriately, there are some chilling things in a program that will be linked to the description, the written description for the Vector 1086. We spoke about the deep involvement of Ukrainian fascism, not only in the U.S., but its operations in the U.S. Prior to the onset of World War II. That involvement of the Ukrainian fascist milieu with the U.S. deepened and multiplied exponentially after World War II with the importation of the aforementioned Gehlen spy outfit and the joining of organizations like the OUNB and the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations to not only the CIA but also to the Republican Party per se. That organization also has strong links to British intelligence and to German intel as well. And there is an OUND/Ukrainian diaspora around the world. In a program, in For the Record program 1072, we looked at not only a bunch of youth in high school in Baraboo, Wisconsin, giving the Nazi salute, but also the Ukrainian youth camp in that very same town and their celebration of people like Roman Shukevich, Stefan Bandera, and Simon Petlura, all of whom were not only pogromists, but Ukrainian fascists of various kinds. The first two, Roman Shukevich, head of the UPA, and Stefan Bandera, the head of the OUND, were again instrumental in the administration of Nazi policy in Ukraine. The wartime head of Ukraine, Yaroslav Stetsko, became a key functionary of the ABN in the post-World War II period, networked with powerful American politicians, people like Richard Nixon, George H.W. Bush, Ronald Reagan, and the OUND had strong links to the Reagan White House. Yaroslav Stetsko's personal secretary in the early 1980s was a guy named Roman Zvarich. Roman Zvarich is the spokesperson, or was until recently, may very well still be, the spokesperson for the Nazi Azov Battalion, which continues to get funding and training from elements of the U.S. military, and which may very well have been networking with people like Brenton Tarrant, the Christchurch, New Zealand shooter. The Azov Battalion is now fashioning itself as an outreach organization to network with various fascists, not only from Europe, but from the U.S. as well. And in the person of Roman Zvarich, who was also the Minister of Justice, the equivalent of Attorney General under Viktor Yushchenko's government in Ukraine that followed the so-called Orange Revolution, and both Tymoshenko governments, Roman Zvarich, the personal secretary to Yaroslav Stetsko in the early 1980s, is the chief spokesperson for the Azov Battalion. Again, from the Kiev Post of July 29th of 2019, indicative of not only the profound involvement of Ukrainian fascism masquerading as nationalism in Ukraine, but its presence around the world, and the overall affiliation with the milieu we are about to highlight, with aforementioned elements like the OUND and Stefan Bandera, will become clear. Although much of the piece that I'm about to excerpt glosses over some of these connections, they are very important indeed. Again, the Kiev Post of July 29th of 2019, an article by Ashkold Krushinsky, and I'm probably butchering the name, Krushelnycky, may look good in the Cyrillic alphabet, but is unpronounceable practically in English. Ukrainian youth organization CYM thriving in America. Basically, this is the Bandera Youth. The Kiev Post joined hundreds of people who came to a Ukrainian-American Youth Association camp and resort in New York State for an extended weekend that included celebrating America's Independence Day and commemorating Ukrainian heroes who fought throughout the ages for their country's freedom. The association is known by the Ukrainian acronym CYM, pronounced S-U-M, of its name Shtilka Ukrainsky Molody, along with the Ukrainian scouting movement PLAST, P-L-A-S-T. It is one of the two main youth groups that flowered in the post-World War II diaspora and taught younger generations about their heritage and ensured that the Ukrainian community remained vibrant. CYM has four camps in various parts of the U.S. The New York one, named after the nearest small town of 4,000 residents, Ellenville, is set in picturesque, undulating countryside near the Catskill Forest Preserve National Park and its territory includes hills, woods, and a stream filled with trout and bass. It was bought by the Ukrainian community in the 1960s. And that is a community with strong links not only to intelligence services of this country and Germany and others, but also to what I have called the Underground Reich, and I mean that quite literally. Skipping down. There are elements of military discipline in SUN, as there are in other youth organizations, such as the Scouting Movement. They learn drill so that they can march or assemble in formation. They wear uniforms for Sunday church services and on some other special occasions. Uniforms consist of gray shirts with matching trousers or skirts. Different colored ties denote age groups, with green for the youngest, burgundy for teenagers, blue for young adults, and brown for the over 30s. Yes, indeed, brown shirts for the over 30s. SUN members around the world wear the same uniform except for a shoulder patch saying which country they belong to. Skipping down again. Talking about one of their get-togethers. The topics that featured in talks for the older members, that would be the brown shirts, this month included the history of Ukraine's struggles in the 20th century for freedom. Much time was devoted to the leader of the Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists, Stefan Bandera, as 2019 sees the 110th anniversary of his birth and 60th anniversary of his assassination by the Soviet KGB. By the way, as we looked at in For the Record program numbers 777 and 876, that assassination actually appears to have been performed by elements of Western intelligence and disinformation about that, used to tar Lee Harvey Oswald as a KGB assassin and the assassination of JFK as an act of Soviet terror. Again, we went into that at some length and For the Record 777 and also at greater length in 876. Skipping down again. After World War II, SUN started to be rebuilt by refugees from Ukraine, tens of thousands of whom lived for several years in displaced persons camps in Germany and Austria. Translation, Galen, ABN, CIA. Bandera supporters were instrumental in reviving SUN in the West after the war, and the association is clearly streaked with their style of impassioned Ukrainian patriotism, fascism, actually, once again. Bandera, actually, let me read both sentences. After World War II, CYN started to be rebuilt by refugees from Ukraine, tens of thousands of whom lived for several years in displaced persons camps in Germany and Austria. Bandera supporters were instrumental in reviving SUN in the West after the war, and the association is clearly streaked with their style of impassioned Ukrainian patriotism. Recall in the article with which we began our program, Combat 14 or C-14, the militia of the Svoboda Group, won a civil action in Kyiv City Court, saying they were nationalists, not neo-Nazis, even though they are, obviously, Nazis. They are also part, however, of the Ukrainian government. Continuing about SUN. It flourished in every country with significant Ukrainian communities, including the United Kingdom, Canada, Germany, Belgium, France, the Netherlands, Argentina, Brazil, Australia, and New Zealand. By the way, again, Breton Tarrant, the Christchurch shooter, had visited Ukraine and was apparently networking with Azov, as we have looked at in recent programs. Specifically, we looked at that in 1084. Continuing and skipping down. On July 7th, with SUM members in full uniform and visitors also taking part, there was a church service at the camp's own chapel. That was followed by a wreath-laying ceremony at a nearby monument dedicated to Ukraine, to all of Ukraine's independence heroes. Dmitry Lenchuk, as chief instructor, was responsible for working out the schedule of lessons and activities for the camp. He is a second-generation American whose grandparents arrived in the U.S. after the war, and he said he was 3 or 4 years old when he first put on a CYM uniform. Bandera youth here in the U.S., and they are continuing a profound Ukrainian fascist presence in the U.S. that dates back well before World War II, and again, I will link a program in which we spoke about that. Now, in addition to the OUNB, the Iron Guard, the Ukrainian Ustashi, the Bulgarian National Front, and others, among the Eastern European fascist elements deeply involved with the Galen spy outfit, the ABN, CIA, and BND, is the Estonian fascist milieu. The Estonian Legion was an Estonian Waffen-SS unit. It is now being celebrated in parts of Estonia, and Estonia is basically gravitating in that direction. An article from The Guardian of May 21st, 2019 by Sean Walker. Now note here the role of anti-immigrant sentiment in generating fascist sentiments in Ukraine. Of course, that will be labeled as nationalist or populist. And note the fact that Ukraine has almost, note the fact that Estonia has almost no immigration. Again, from The Guardian of May 21st of this year, 2019, by Sean Walker. Racism, sexism, Nazi economics. Estonia's far right in power. A shadowy deep state secretly runs the country. A smart immigration policy is blacks go back. Nazi Germany wasn't all bad. None of these statements would be out of place in the darker corners of far-right blogs anywhere in the world, but in Estonia as of last month, they are among the views of government ministers. Since emerging from the Soviet shadow 3 decades ago, Estonia has gained a reputation as a country with a savvy focus on e-government, a vibrant free media, and broadly progressive politics. But as in many European countries, Estonia's far right has been edging upwards in the polls in recent years, and nobody was all that surprised when the nationalist EKRE party won 19 out of 101 seats in parliamentary elections in March. The real shock came a few weeks later when the Prime Minister, Jüri Ratas, J-U-R-I-R-A-T-A-S, invited EKRE to join a coalition government. Ratas offered EKRE 5 out of 15 ministerial positions as well as policy concessions, including agreeing to hold a referendum on whether to define marriage as only between a man and a woman. The party's father and son leaders, Mart and Martin Helm, took the key posts of Interior and Finance Minister respectively and celebrated by flashing a white power symbol at their swearing-in ceremony. Again, the party's father and son leaders, Mart, M-A-R-T, and Martin, M-A-R-T, and Helme, or Helm, H-E-L-M-E, took the key posts of Interior and Finance Minister respectively and celebrated by flashing a white power symbol at their swearing-in ceremony. Skipping down. Many liberals fear the climate has already started to change. Vilyakisra, I'm probably butchering many of these, or most of these names, V-I-L-J-A-K-I-I-S-L-E-R, a columnist at the newspaper Postimees, with 2 decades of journalistic experience, said her editor-in-chief called her into his office shortly after the coalition formed and told her a piece she had written about EKRE was too aggressive and she should tone down her rhetoric. Quote, I've always criticized the people in power, and this had never happened before, she said. Rather than accept self-censorship, she decided to resign. Quote, style and content are always connected, and I meant every word, comma, and full stop. If you can't be sharp and clear in an opinion piece, then what is the point? Unquote. Kiesler said EKRE media portals attacked her work, and she received threats of violence and rape through email and Facebook, which she has reported to the police. For a country whose media landscape was this year ranked the 11th most free in the world, the resignations of Kiesler and a state radio journalist who left his job for similar reasons have come as a shock. They even prompted Estonia's president, Kersti Kaljulaid, K-A-L-J-U-L-A-I-D, to wear a sweater emblazoned with the words, speech is free, unquote, to the swearing-in of the new government. Kaljulaid said she wore the sweater because of the climate of increasing verbal attacks on Estonian journalists. Quote, this can lead to self-censorship in the sense that you don't talk anymore to avoid this kind of S-blank-blank-blank storm, and I don't want this to happen, she told The Guardian in an interview at Pauline's presidential palace. Skipping down again. EKRE has forged links with other far-right groups in Europe, joining the Italian Interior Minister Matteo Salvini's coalition of nationalists and welcoming France's Marine Le Pen to Pauline for discussions. Like populist parties across Europe, EKRE has highlighted immigration as a key battleground issue. Mass migration hardly seems a major concern for Estonia, which has not been on any route to Europe taken by refugees and migrants from the Middle East and Africa, but EKRE has suggested that by allowing any migration at all, Estonia will be vulnerable to future pressure from Brussels to resettle many more refugees. Again, like populist parties across Europe, EKRE has highlighted immigration as a key battleground issue. And again, there has hardly been any. Skipping down. Jock Madison, an EKRE MP who will also become an MEP if the party clears the threshold at upcoming European elections, said the country could take, quote, 10 or 50 refugees, but with the proviso that, quote, when the war is over, they return home, unquote. Skipping down. MEP, by the way, is a member of the European Parliament. Madison is considered the polished face of the party. When asked about the blog spot he wrote several years ago praising Nazi economics, he did not disown the views. Quote, the fact is that the economic situation raised. That's a fact. How did it happen? It was very wrong things, but if you're pushing people to camps, it's wrong. But the fact is that the unemployment rate was low, said Madison. He said, one more time, it was very wrong. Well, it's bad English, but it was very wrong things. If you're pushing people to camps, it's wrong. But the fact is that unemployment rate was low, he said. Madison is not the only EKRE MP to be curious about Nazi economics. Ruben Kalep, K-A-A-L-E-P, the leader of EKRE's youth wing, Blue Awakening, said right-wing politicians, quote, can't completely disown Nazi Germany, which had certain positive elements. Kalep is Estonia's youngest MP, aged 25, and in an interview at a chic restaurant not far from the parliament, he described his mission as fighting against, quote, native replacement, unquote, the LGBT agenda, and, quote, leftist global ideological hegemony. And again, the replacement of white people, LGBT agenda, leftist global ideological hegemony are common themes in various fascist groups around the country.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
We're going to take a look at an article from the New York Times about the role of the Internet in the rise of the Sweden Democrats. And although they are now an anti-immigrant, quote, populist party, they have Nazi origins. And what although the article attempts to lay much of the blame for this on Russian influence, etc., etc., in fact, the Internet and elements associated with the U.S. far right and others bear greater responsibility. Now, again, we're talking about the Sweden Democrats. And before we get to this, because, again, the article itself attempts to attribute the blame for the rise of the Sweden Democrats on, you guessed it, Russia, rather like what the U.S. is doing, attempting to blame the rise of Donald Trump on Russian interference in the U.S. elections. For the U.S. to try to attribute the rise of Trump to Russia is rather like the Roman Empire trying to focus blame for the rise of Caligula on Carthage. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But we are in that kind of a time. Remember when you hear about the Sweden Democrats, who was involved with their financing from the register of from Great Britain of May 7th of 2007 by Jan Lubenga, L-I-W-B-E-N-G-A. The Pirate Bay admits link with right-wing benefactor. This is about the Pirate Bay website, which was the website on which WikiLeaks held forth, and which is financed by Carl Lundstrom, who also financed much of the activity for the Sweden Democrats. A spokesman for the Swedish torrent tracker, the Pirate Bay, has admitted on Swedish TV that their servers and broadband bandwidth were financed by Carl Lundstrom, one of the alleged sponsors of Swedish far-right political party Sweden Democrats. We needed the money, unquote, spokesman Tobias Anderson told Bert Carlson, a former politician and front figure of the New Democracy Party. Carl Lundstrom is the CEO and largest shareholder of Rix Telecom, a large provider in Sweden, where at least one member of the Pirate Bay used to work. Lundstrom is also believed to be a major financier of Sweden Democrats. Now, bear in mind not only that the WikiLeaks network was financed by Carl Lundstrom, the website on which they held forth for some time, financed by Carl Lundstrom, who also financed Sweden Democrats. Bear in mind that, as revealed by Expo, the magazine founded by the late novelist Stig Larsson, the fellow responsible for bringing WikiLeaks to the Pirate Bay website was Joran Jermas, a.k.a. Israel Shamir, a Russian-born fascist who was in charge of WikiLeaks operations for Belarus and for Russia. And his son, of a similar political stripe, Johannes Wallström, is in charge of WikiLeaks activities for Scandinavia. As I have noted in the past, cyber activities are notoriously easy for a skilled internet operator to forge. It can be difficult for even a relatively skilled analyst to determine the precise origin of posting or, in particular, hacking from various online sources. And note also that there is a powerful Russian fascist community, and Joran Jermas, a.k.a. Israel Shamir, a key Assange aide, was part of that powerful Russian fascist community. He also had strong links to Ukrainian fascism as well, in particular the MAUP network, M-A-U-P, as we have looked at in the past. From the Jewish Chronicle of July 2nd of 2011 by Martin Bright, by the way, this and the previous article from For the Record 745 revealed anti-Semite was key to WikiLeaks operation. Skipping down. The notorious anti-Semitic journalist Israel Shamir was actively involved in developing the WikiLeaks network and was not just another freelance writer who happened to strike up a working relationship with the website's founder, Julian Assange, according to newly revealed correspondence. Emails seen by the Swedish anti-racist magazine Expo, again founded by the late Stig Larsson, demonstrate that the two men cooperated for several years. As early as 2008, Mr. Shamir was asked to recommend potential associates in Sweden. He suggested his own son, Johannes Wahlström, W-A-H-L-S-T-R-O-N. He is a Swedish citizen and lives in Sweden. Probably he'll be able to give advice about press freedom, unquote. Like his father, Mr. Wahlström has developed a reputation for strident anti-Semitic views. In 2005, left-wing magazine Ord Front was forced to withdraw one of his articles, which argued that Israel controlled the Swedish media. An email from June of 2010 shows that Mr. Shamir was still playing a part in the Swedish WikiLeaks network at that point. Quote, I have a lot of good guys who can help to analyze the treasure, and it would be good to start spreading the news, he told Mr. Assange. I am now in Paris, and people want to know more. Today I go to Sweden, and there is a whole operation there for your benefit, Mr. Assange replied. There certainly is. Tell the team to get ready. Give them my best. We have a lot of work to do. Again, Joran Jermas, a.k.a. Israel Shamir, in charge of WikiLeaks operations in Belarus and Russia, instrumental in bringing WikiLeaks to the Pirate Bay network, financed by Carl Lundstrom, who also finances the Sweden Democrats. From Reason Magazine, by an article by Michael C. Moynihan about Shamir, Assange's extremist employees. Why is WikiLeaks employing a Holocaust denier and his disgraced son? Again, this from For the Record 745. So let us quickly recap the foulness of Shamir's political views. As I noted last week, he has called the Auschwitz concentration camp, quote, an internment facility attended by the Red Cross as opposed to the U.S. internment center in Guantanamo, unquote, not a place of extermination. He told a Swedish journalist and fellow Holocaust denier that, quote, it's every Muslim and Christian's duty to deny the Holocaust. Again, top aide Julian Assange, in charge of WikiLeaks operations in Russia and Belarus, his son in charge of WikiLeaks Scandinavian operations, and the fellow who brought WikiLeaks to the Pirate Bay website, financed by Carl Lundstrom, who also finances Sweden Democrats. And from Inside WikiLeaks, My Time with Julian Assange at the World's Most Dangerous Website by Daniel Domscheit-Baird. We talked about this in For the Record 745. People are now apparently traveling the world offering unreleased WikiLeaks dispatches to other media outlets. One of these people is Johannes Wahlström from Sweden. Wahlström is the son of Israel Shamir, a notorious anti-Semite and Holocaust denier of Russian-Israeli extraction. Kristen Rothnesson WikiLeaks' new official spokesman has described both Wallstrom and Shamir as belonging to WikiLeaks. Once Assange described to me things Shamir had written as, quote, very clever, really. I think Julian is aware of the sort of people he's associating himself with. There's been contact with Shamir at least for years. When Julian first learned about Shamir's political background, he considered whether he might be able to work for WikiLeaks under a pseudonym. From the outside, it looks as though Wallstrom has passed on the cables to various media outlets in Scandinavia, while his father has assumed responsibility for the Russian market. Again, Sweden Democrats involved here with the people who were involved with WikiLeaks, Carl Lundstrom, one of their major financiers. And I mention that because this New York Times article goes on at great length about the, quote, Russian, unquote, involvement with the Sweden Democrats and their alleged responsibility for that. So bearing in mind that some of the key people involved with WikiLeaks are also involved with the rise of the Sweden Democrats. But now, again, note the role of anti-immigrant sentiment in this, and note the role of the Internet in this as well. From the New York Times of August 10th, 2019, article by Joe J.O. Becker, the global machine behind the rise of far-right nationalism, unquote. Johnny Castillo, a Peruvian-born neighborhood watchman in this district of Stockholm, still puzzles over the strange events that 2 years ago turned the central square of this predominantly immigrant community into a symbol of multiculturalism run amok. First came a now infamous comment by President Trump suggesting that Sweden's history of welcoming refugees was at the root of a violent attack in Rinkeby by the previous evening, even though nothing had actually happened. Look at what's happening last night in Sweden. Sweden! Who would believe this? Sweden, Mr. Trump told supporters at a rally on February 18, 2017. They took in large numbers. They're having problems like they never thought possible, unquote. The president's source, Fox News, which had excerpted a short film promoting a dystopian view of Sweden as a victim of its asylum policies, with immigrant neighborhoods, crime-ridden, quote, no-go zones, unquote. But 2 days later, as Swedish officials were heaping bemused derision on Mr. Trump, something did in fact happen in Rinkeby. Several dozen masked men attacked police officers, making a drug arrest, throwing rocks, and setting cars ablaze. Skipping down. That nativist rhetoric that immigrants are invading the homeland has gained ever greater traction and political acceptance across the West and amid dislocations wrought by vast waves of migration from the Middle East, Africa, and Latin America. One more time. That nativist rhetoric that immigrants are invading the homeland has gained ever greater traction and political acceptance across the West, and amid dislocations wrought by vast waves of migration from the Middle East, Africa, and Latin America. In its most extreme form, it is echoed in the online manifesto of the man accused of gunning down 22 people last weekend in El Paso. In the nationalists' message-making, Sweden has become a prime cautionary tale, dripping with schadenfreude. What is even more striking is how many people in Sweden, progressive, egalitarian, welcoming Sweden, seem to be warming to the nationalists' view that immigration has brought crime, chaos, and a fraying of the cherished social safety net, not to mention a withering away of national culture and tradition. Fueled by an immigration backlash, Sweden has accepted more refugees per capita than any other European country. Right-wing populism has taken hold, reflected most prominently in the steady ascent of a political party with neo-Nazi roots, the Sweden Democrats, parenthetically financed by Carl Lundstrom, who also financed Pirate Bay, where WikiLeaks held forth for a long time, as we have seen. Continuing. In elections last year, they captured nearly 18% of the vote. To dig beneath the surface of what is happening in Sweden, though, is to uncover the workings of an international disinformation machine devoted to the cultivation, provocation, and amplification of far-right, anti-immigrant passions and political forces. Indeed, that machine, most influentially rooted in Vladimir V. Putin's Russia, picked up a grain of salt, and the American far-right, underscores a fundamental irony of this political moment, the globalization of nationalism. The central target of these manipulations from abroad and the chief instrument of the Swedish nationalists' success is the country's increasingly popular and virulently anti-immigrant digital echo chamber. A New York Times examination of its content, personnel, and traffic patterns illustrates how foreign state and non-state actors have helped to give viral momentum to a clutch of Swedish far-right websites. Russian and Western entities that traffic in disinformation, including an Islamophobic think tank whose former chairman is now Mr. Trump's national security advisor, have been crucial links to the Swedish sites, helping to spread their message to susceptible Swedes. And skipping down. The distorted view of Sweden pumped up by this disinformation machine has been used in turn by anti-immigrant parties in Britain, Germany, Italy, and elsewhere. They don't mention the U.S., nor do they mention that WikiLeaks held forth on a site financed by the same guy who's financing the Sweden Democrats. And, of course, New York Times was deeply involved, along with the Washington Post and others, in publishing WikiLeaks, and Julian Assange was a big hero to the New York Times. But we're not hearing about Carl Lundstrom. We're not hearing about Israel Shamir, a.k.a. Jaron Jeremias et al. Stig Larsson did that, and keep that in mind, and keep Carl Lundstrom in mind as you hear about the Sweden Democrats that he financed. Again, the distorted view of Sweden pumped out by this disinformation machine has been used in turn by anti-immigrant parties in Britain, Germany, Italy, and elsewhere to stir xenophobia and gin up votes, according to the Institute for Strategic Dialogue, a London-based nonprofit that tracks the online spread of far-right extremism. Quote, "I put Sweden up there with the anti-Soros campaign," said Chloe Colliver, a researcher for the Institute, referring to anti-Semitic attacks on George Soros, the billionaire benefactor of liberal causes. It's become an enduring centerpiece of the far-right conversation. Now, listen about the origins of the Sweden Democrats, who have now rebranded themselves as anti-immigrant, but again, financed by Carl Lundstrom, who also financed Pirate Bay that hosted WikiLeaks. Mattias Karlsson, K-A-R-L-S-S-O-N, the Sweden Democrats' international secretary and chief ideologist, likes to tell a story of how he became a soldier in what he has described as, quote, "the existential battle for our cultures and our nation's survival." It was the mid-1990s, and Mr. Carlson, now 41, was attending high school in the southern city of Växjö, V-A-X-J-O. Sweden was accepting a record number of refugees from the Balkan War and other conflicts. In Växjö and elsewhere, young immigrant men began joining brawling, quote, "kicker," unquote, gangs, radicalizing Mr. Carlson and drawing him toward the local skinhead scene. He took to wearing a leather jacket with a Swedish flag on the back and was soon introduced to Mats, M-A-T-S Nilsson, N-I-L-S-S-O-N, a Swedish National Socialist leader who gave him a copy of Mein Kampf. They began to debate. Mr. Nilsson argued that the goal should be ethnic purity, the preservation of Swedish DNA. Mr. Carlson countered that the focus should be on preserving national culture and identity. That, he said, was when Mr. Nilsson conferred on him an epithet of insufficient commitment to the cause, quote, meatball patriot, unquote, meaning the, quote, I thought that every African or Arab can come to this country as long as they assimilate and eat meatballs, unquote. It is an account that offers the most benign explanation for an odious association. Whatever the case, in 1999, Mr. Carlson joined the Sweden Democrats, a party undeniably rooted in Sweden's neo-Nazi movement. Indeed, scholars of the far right say that it is what sets it apart from most anti-immigration parties in Europe and makes its rise from marginalized to mainstream so remarkable. The party was founded in 1988 by several Nazi ideologues, including a former member of the Waffen-SS. Early on, it sought international alliances with the likes of the White Aryan Resistance, a white supremacist group founded by a former Grand Dragon of the Ku Klux Klan. Some Sweden Democrats wore Nazi uniforms to party functions. Its platform included the forced repatriation of all immigrants since 1970. That was not, however, a winning formula in a country where Social Democrats had dominated every election for more than a century. While attending university, Mr. Carlson had met Jimmy Åkesson, a.k.a. SSON, who took over the Sweden Democrats' youth party in 2000 and became party leader in 2005. Mr. Åkesson was outspoken in his belief that Muslim refugees posed, quote, the biggest foreign threat in Sweden since the Second World War, unquote. But to make that case effectively, he and Mr. Carlson agreed they needed to remake the party's image. We needed to really address our past, Mr. Carlson said. They purged neo-Nazis who had been exposed by the press. Bear in mind, the party was founded in part by a veteran of the Waffen-SS, which makes the comment about World War II rather interesting under the circumstances. They announced a zero-tolerance policy toward extreme xenophobia and racism, emphasized their youthful leadership, and urged members to dress presentably. And while immigration remained at the center of their platform, they moderated the way they talked about it. No longer was the issue framed in terms of keeping certain ethnic groups out or deporting those already in. Rather, it was about how unassimilated immigrants were eviscerating not just the nation's cultural identity, but also the social welfare heart of the Swedish state. Under the grand egalitarian idea of the folk hemmet, or people's home in which the country is a family and its citizens take care of one another, Swedes pay among the world's highest effective tax rates in return for benefits like child care, health care, free college education, and assistance when they grow old. The safety net has come under a strain for a host of economic and demographic reasons, many of which predate the latest refugee flood. We will continue with this article, but again note that Sweden has taken in the largest number of refugees per capita, and yet the refrain of the Sweden Democrats is the same as the EKRE fascists in Estonia, which has no refugees. We'll take this up in our next program. This, however, concludes For the Record program number 1086, Fascism, 2019 World Tour, Part 1. This is being recorded on September 3rd of the year 2019. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.